At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Done this before?
Yeah, I've done a couple.
Have you ever used the StreamYard?
No, I've used a variety of them, like SamSquatch, and there's a bunch.
Never heard of that one. It sounds like Sasquatch, which I'm super into lately, but we won't go into that. Do you believe in Sasquatch?
That's up for debate.
I mean, it's always a question I like to ask someone that spends a lot of time in the woods. Like, my dad is a hunter, and he's a lumberjack, like a logger. He owns a logging company. And so he's spent a bunch of time in the woods, and he thinks it's bullshit. He doesn't believe in it. But it's just because he hasn't seen Bigfoot. That's what I think. Yeah.
I mean, I've been out there enough. I haven't seen one. I haven't seen any sign of one. I mean, we stayed 2 weeks in the highest density of Sasquatches in Alberta at Nordegg.
Oh, yeah?
And the only thing I got out of that was I met the guy that runs around in the suit all the time.
Oh, okay. All right, fine. Sasquatch isn't real, apparently. I still think it is, though. I feel like I hear tree knocks all the time out here.
No, we just recently moved from the city to actually out on an acreage out in the country, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's where that's what we got going on here. We got 70 acres between like my husband's property and his dad's. Maybe I'll start it with this that will lead into your story. And thank you so much for doing this, by the way. Just want to start with that. Thank you. This is where I saw a bear just like 2 days ago. But it was just a black bear. I mean, that's not going to be as scary. But my husband called me as I was walking up to, because he was on our roof trying to build our house. Our house is up there. And he called me and he was like, Rachel, I don't want you to freak out, but there's a bear behind you. And I was with my dog, so I was more like freaked out about that. But I did the wrong thing. So I'm going to ask you for tips later. But I did like kind of a, it was a fast walk, but kind of a run, which I guess you're not supposed to do. But I was just worried about my dog, like going to chase him, and my dog's also blind. And so I was just like, okay, I just got to get him into safety. Anyways, that's all.
I don't know if I'm the best guy to ask for tips. I think I did everything wrong.
Let's start from the beginning. I love the story of you and your wife, that she was your first girlfriend, you were her first boyfriend, and maybe start with your guys' relationship, then your relationship with the outdoors, and then go into your story, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. So I met my wife.
That was a lot.
That was. So I met my wife in high school, actually. I was sitting there playing chess one day, and saw her walk by in the hallway, and I told my buddies that we're playing chess with, I'm like, hey, that's the girl I'm going to take to prom. And of course, all the guys there were laughing at me, saying she was out of my league and all that. Well, sure enough, it was about 3 months later, 4 months later, I asked her out. And from there, we both loved the outdoors, loved to go out hiking, fishing. Pretty soon, the outdoors kind of took over everything, and we ran around the bush like wild people and fishing every weekend, camping. Instead of going out partying with everybody, we just spent that money on gas and would drive out to the mountains and go into places like Pickle Jar Lakes, which is quite a few, I guess about 4 or 5 kilometer hike in and go fishing way up on top of the mountains, catch a little tiny cutthroat. We just spent all of our time out there, and that, you know, passion kind of turned into an obsession, and we decided to get married. And kind of like any, I guess, outdoor person, we I asked her to marry me on top of a mountain in the middle of January and minus 30 below.
That's cute. Minus 30 below. Jeez. Wait, but that would be Celsius. Wait, that's like really minus, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's about minus the same. I think at minus 32 is about, I think, is when they go even.
Okay. Jeez.
So
that's very cute.
So we hiked up this creek called King Creek, and it was just like a big valley, or kind of like a canyon. On each side of the canyon was these waterfalls all frozen in, and we kept walking, but every place I found that I wanted to propose, there was people climbing there, ice climbing. So we had to keep going farther and farther back in, and finally we got to a nice little open spot near the top of the mountain, and I was talking to her about what's like the best proposal thing, because all her friends were handing out these really fancy expensive rings, and she said, I'd rather a boat than a big fancy ring, because that's something we can use. And so we were up on top of the mountain, this nice little open spot, and I'm like, damn. She's like, what? I said, well, that helicopter pilot really screwed up, he didn't drop the boat here. And she started laughing. She turned and looked away, and I pulled her hand back, and she turned back. I popped out the ring, and she was kind of stunned there for a minute, and yeah, the rest was history.
Oh, that's so cute. And she is basically, well, her and your daughter, like how you got through this ordeal. So do you want to start with, your story?
Yeah, so the in August 24th, 2017, I started to well, it was all year, that whole entire year, 2017, I spent out hiking in the mountains and fishing with my wife and my young daughter. She's about 6 to 8 months old at the time. And we were out scouting for sheep. And there's a nice little creek there in the area where we go fishing. So all summer long, we were in there every weekend hiking in. And on August 24th, I left that morning to go by myself back in to go on a 4-day sheep hunt. This was actually the first time being away from the wife and little one. So we planned going in 4 days, a day before the season, and then hopefully find my ram and then harvest him and get out during the 4 days. So it was
Can I interrupt you? Do people eat bighorn sheep or rams?
You got to eat what you harvest.
Yeah, okay, I figured, but I just trying to think of what that would taste like.
So a ram is probably not the best tasting because they're pretty old or really tough, but it's much more rewarding when you hike up a mountain and harvest one and carry them out. I mean, it tastes a lot better to me.
Got it. I agree. Although I've never done that, but yeah.
It's a challenge. I spent up to this point, it was 17 years of hiking back into this spot looking for sheep. And you see lots of rams, but it's hard to judge what a legal one is, because they got to be at least a 4-fist curl. And so this year I found some rams, found one that was definitely legal, and this is my year to go in there. I was pretty excited. So I left the house around 11 o'clock at night, drove out. When I got out to the place, it was about 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning, and I got the moonlight out, and I hopped on my bicycle and rode down the trail. It gets way in the back. My camp's about 18 or so kilometers off the main road, and I rode my bike in, and I got way into the back where I normally start seeing sheep or where the sheep have been, and I'm walking through the trees on my bicycle and come up this very steep drainage, and I get to the edge of the tree line, and I noticed some sheep right away, and I got pretty excited, and I was taking my time watching with my binoculars, and I'd move about 10 feet and watch for about 10 minutes just to see where they're doing, and following kind of them back to where they go bed down. I got a little bit further in, right along the edge of the tree line, and I noticed some rams. So I got pretty, really excited. So I took off my backpack and I had my bicycle there, and I leaned the backpack against the bicycle frame and had my elbows on the handlebars. And I was sitting there, looking across the valley at the sheep, and I, stood up to stretch for a second. And when I did that, I noticed a little brown thing ran right in front of me, less than 10 feet away. Ooh. And it just, yeah, it just, when you see it, you're like, what the heck? You know, it just all, it was just scary. It was a kind of a scary spot to be in. I can describe like being in a car and you're going in a car wreck, you know, you're going to hit the guy in front of you, but it seems to take forever. And you know, something bad's going to happen. And you're just waiting for it to happen.
That makes me nervous.
So right away when she, I saw the cub, I just got this feeling of being totally screwed. Like I knew mama was there, but where was she? So I was reaching down in my backpack to grab my bear spray. And as I was doing that, reaching down in, I heard a branch break over my right shoulder. And when I turned and looked, there was mama already there, just a little over her arm's reach away. I can see the whites of her eyes. She had her, one of her paws stretched out, her right arm stretched out, ready to grab me. And you can see like the whites of her eyes, her teeth were showing, her mouth was slightly open. And, I had, you know, like half a second to react. I just grabbed my bike frame and just moved it in front of her and took a step aside. And her head went through the frame of the bicycle and she picked it up and turned and looked at me. And she had this, you know, like a necklace of my bicycle on her. And I grabbed my pack.
That shouldn't be funny, but it's kind of funny.
She had a little surprised look in her face. When she turned and looked at me, I had my pack, and the first thing I did was just hit her right in the nose with it. Then she shook the bicycle off, and then she managed to get a hold of my right hand on the frame of the pack, and she crunched my left hand against the frame of the pack. And I just remember feeling her teeth through my hand, and you could feel it grinding on the pack. It was like separating my fingers. I managed to get my hand away. And then I got real mad and aggressive, so I started really hitting her in the face and bumping her on top of the head with the pack as hard as I could. She got a hold of the pack and was shaking it and pulling it, and ended up hitting her in the nose really hard, and she started to back away. And so I started to back up, and I remember just looking down, trying to unzip my backpack to get my bear spray out. And as I was unzipping my pack, I took my eyes off of her, and I looked up. And I remember she's about 30 feet away, and she spun around, and then she come charging in. And this is what I call the beginning of round two.
I've heard your story now. I've probably listened to that survival stories podcast, I don't know, 30 times. It feels like, I still feel like the blood's being drained from my body when you're telling me this story. I'm just like so terrified for you.
It was a scary moment. Like when I remember looking down my pack and I looked up at him, like, oh shit, like she's coming again. And like, I don't know what to do. Like, nowhere to hide, nothing to, you know, I don't have my bicycle no more to throw around her neck. Like I had nothing. She was running at me, and I just figured, well, I'm going to throw my pack at her. Hopefully it distracts her and she eats my lunch and, you know, I can run away. So I threw my pack and I decided to run up the mountainside, and it was a fairly steep slope, you know, probably 40, 50% kind of thing. And my object was to run up the hill and jump off of the high side of the hill into a tree to get more height quicker, because, you know, bears are pretty quick. So I managed to get about 60 or so yards away and jumped into a spruce tree. Wasn't a very big tree, maybe a 6 to 8 inch caliper base tree. So just a little guy. I managed to get 5-6 feet off the ground to about where my center of body was. And I was trying to pull up my right leg was hanging low. And I just remember looking down on the tree, trying to pull my leg up, and I can hear her running on the ground, huffing, just coming in and chomping her gums. She got to the base of the tree and she stood up on her hind legs. And I just remember watching her wrap her paws just right around my right leg, kind of around the knee area. And I'm looking down and she's lunging up to bite my knee, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to hurt. And like, you're looking down and nothing you could do. She's already got, you know, the paws wrapped around my leg. And anyway, she lunged up and grabbed me behind the knee. So her front teeth were on either side of the kneecap on the front side, and she crunched down. And to my surprise, there was no pain.
Really? And I was hanging on. Just in shock, maybe? Probably?
I think so. I think a little bit of shock.
Okay.
Yeah. So she grabbed on, and I was holding on for dear life, and she just pulled her head down and ripped me out of the tree like nothing.
How big was she, would you say? Like when she stood up, like how tall?
Probably close to 6 feet in height.
Wow.
On her hind legs to her head. And they're quite scary when they stand up. I mean, they're pretty tall.
Yeah. Anyways, continue, sorry.
So I hit the ground pretty hard, and I crawled underneath the tree because it was a spruce tree and it had, you know, thick spruce boughs on the bottom. So I crawled right underneath there and wrapped my arms and legs around the base of the tree and kind of protecting myself, holding on. Hopefully she wouldn't be able to, you know, dig at me. And so she was in there clawing, trying to pull me away, but the spruce brows seemed to be doing the job. And then she almost seemed like she got frustrated, and she reached in with her mouth and she grabbed me on the left side, just in the love handles, kind of lower part of the rib cage, actually where the rib cage ends, a little soft spot. Mm-hmm. She bit me there, picked me up, and just shook her head and chucked me onto the ground. And I hit really hard, and it knocked the wind out of me. And I was trying to take a breath.
She fully lifted your body up, like fully lifted
fully
you
off the ground, and just threw me with her head.
And you're not a super small dude. I mean, you look like you're in shape, but like, meaning like you, what? Weigh like 190 or something.
At the time of the incident, I weighed 254 pounds. That's what they weighed me at the hospital, bare naked when I rolled in. And I'm 6 foot tall. I was in pretty good shape for at the time. I mean, that's what I was doing all summer long, riding my bike and jogging up and down the hills and there. So I was in probably best shape of my life.
And she was able to lift you off. It's unbelievable to me.
The amount of strength and power they have is unbelievable. Like, she tossed me around like a rag doll. There's nothing I can do. And she just would throw me around.
Okay. Horrifying. Continue.
So so I hit the ground and I'm trying to catch my breath and I'm curling up in a ball and I'm laying on my right side and I'm trying to curl up in a ball and trying to take a breath. And before I can even get a breath in, she was on top of me, just like lightning. Just there she was. And her first bite caught me on the left side of my face here. Her top two canine teeth caught me on either side of the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And when she bit down, she removed the whole left side of my face. Just one bite.
Oh, my God.
And I'm laying
there. Your face looks good now, though.
Thanks. Looks good. A little bit of work done.
Yeah, same.
A little bit of makeup, you know, make it all...
Yeah, I've had some work done. Anyways.
So she takes that big bite and I'm laying there and I'm playing dead and I'm thinking, like, this sucks playing dead. Like, getting chewed on really sucks. So it doesn't work then.
The playing dead doesn't really work, or there's just nothing you can do.
Well, it depends on the situation. So if the bear's coming to eat you, playing dead, no, not going to work. But if it's a defense attack, like she's got cubs, all she's trying to do is neutralize the threat until she feels safe and then move on. So if I were to continue laying there and not done anything, not moved or anything, she probably would have left. But no, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, she's chewing on my face. I'm like, this really sucks. So I rolled over and I was like, screw this. Like, I ain't playing dead no more. So I took my right arm and started punching her in the nose, and I was poking her eye and grabbing her ear, and she was snapping at my hand, and I was trying to just distract her from biting me in the face. And then she went down to bite me a second time in the face, and as she was coming down, her head was right above me, and it just was coming in perfectly from my left hand. I punched my left hand into her mouth, and I felt my fingers slide down her tongue. And you could feel like all the bumps on her tongue and the little, like the scars and the ridge of her tongue. And it just felt like rough leather. Then it turns like soft, smooth leather. And then I remember my middle finger and index finger went down her throat, and I grabbed the rest of her tongue with my thumb and ring finger and pinky and just wrapped around and held onto her tongue. My thought was that if I held on her tongue, she wouldn't be able to bite me.
That's a good theory, actually. I could see that. Yeah.
Just one of those things that roll through your head.
I support it, actually. Yeah.
I mean, the only person who would know if it worked or not would be me. And, you know, I was going to die up there. So I figured I better try something. And I remember my hand in her mouth, and I remember her nose and lower jaw was kind of partway down my forearm. And I was looking at kind of surprised. Like, I was like, holy crap. Like, it's in there. And she started to gag. And at this point in time, I'm laying on my back and her front legs are on my left side. My hands in her mouth down her throat, basically. And her back paws are digging into my hips and stomach area. Her claws are digging in, and, you know, she's sitting on me, and it was quite painful and really hurt. I was trying to push her hind end off, so I kept pushing on her hind end, but I couldn't move her. I mean, she probably was 350 pound female grizzly, so just solid muscle. My hand slipped off of the hind quarter and I hit the belly, and I could tell it was the belly because there was less hair, a little bit thinner, more skin. And I reached up in between the legs, and at the time I grabbed what I thought was balls, just some loose skin, made a big handful of it, twisted and pulled. And when I did that, her head kind of kicked back a little bit. My hand was still in her mouth. She started to squeal like a pig. Like, you could definitely tell it was causing her discomfort. And she was just squealing like a pig, deep, deep squeal of a pig, and almost gagging and throwing up at the same time.
Wow.
So I figured she had enough at this point, and I let go. And she ran back the way she came, just squealing like a pig, like a deep, deep squeal of a pig, and just defecating across the mountainside. And she ran off, and you just hear her running through the bush squealing. And so I got up, and I dusted myself off, and I was like, well, that sucked. And, you know, at this point in time, I didn't realize what my situation was. I can walk, you know, nothing hurt at this point. I got back to my pack, and I pulled out my cell phone, and I was going to take a selfie because I wanted to see what I looked like, because, you know, I wasn't sure. And I took a picture of myself, and I remember sitting there looking at it going, well, it's not too bad. I mean, I can still go over there and shoot that sheep or go look for this bear.
You keep going.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case, now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so you're like, yeah, you're gonna keep going. You're an absolute animal. I actually wrote in my notes, I said, you seem feral like I am. It's a joke, but I wander around our property sometimes at night with a headlamp on, and I've definitely seen like bears and things at night. But, yeah. Oh, just I could tell it was bear eyes. But go ahead.
Well, see, the bears in the States are much more aggressive than the ones up here in Canada. Like, I see all these ones with the bear.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm sure. Like, the ones in Canada here, they sneak up from behind you, give you a big bear hug, you know, a little nibble on the lips. They're, you know, they're quite friendly.
Well, I said, are you sure? Because I seems like one was pretty aggressive towards you. Anyways, okay, you can keep going. Sorry.
All good. So I took a picture of myself, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, well, you know, it's not that bad, right? And this is the picture that's in the book where I'm missing, like, the whole left side of my face and big chunks missing out of my head. And I remember looking at that, and I was just so disappointed because this was my year to shoot my sheep. That's what I tell everybody anyways. like, I found the rams, and I was just so disappointed that now I have to cancel my trip and go back home to deal with this whatever's going on with my face. And I was just so mad and angry at myself, you know. So I'm leaning there against this old rotten log, and I got my pack opened up, and I got my gun off there and started loading up the clip. The gun was leaning against my left shoulder, and I had the clip in my right hand, and I'm popping in rounds into it and just thinking, like, this sucks, right? Like, this really sucks, and I got to walk out. and as I'm sitting there, you know, just complaining, I guess, to myself, everything went numb all of a sudden. My hands dropped to the side, and I heard a sound of, like, ice breaking. And she had come back, and she grabbed me by the back of the head and started dragging me back up the hill into the bush. And I just remember seeing her pause on either side of me, and she's just huffing and just, like, pulling like a dog doing tug of war in her paws. And you see her paws beside me, and she's dragging me back. And I don't know how far she dragged me. It seemed like she dragged me for quite a ways, but, you know, maybe 10, 15 feet. I'm not quite sure. We came to a stop, and I was sitting on my butt still, leaning against what I presume was her. And she reached over with her paw and caught me on the corner of the left side of my mouth, just on the corner. And she peeled right across my face, going from top to bottom, but diagonal to the right side. And she literally peeled off everything off of in one swipe. Peeled off my nose, my jaw, my right eye was actually smashed into my skull. My left eye, at this point, she busted the eye socket and just ripped everything right back, pulling my ears off. She was chewing on the side of my head, and just, I remember she was like gnawing on it like a dog gnawing on a bone. You can just hear her crunching away and just kind of like gnawing on it. You know, this probably was, I say, 15 seconds, maybe 20 seconds. Like, it wasn't very long from when she grabbed me and then she ripped me all apart. Like, it happened so quick. The whole attack itself was probably over, say, 12 to 15 minutes in total length from the first encounter seeing her to this point in time. And the time that I actually physically fought her hand to hand was probably only 90 to 120 seconds tops, like, for all the three rounds.
Wow.
So she started ripping and pulling and chewing on my neck and just chomping and everything. And she let go, and I fell backwards, and I remember hitting the ground, and I could kind of feel everything kind of reattached at that point. Like, I could feel my hands and everything. And I couldn't see. My left eye was actually hanging out of the socket at this point in time. My jaw was hanging down on the left side, just hanging there. I didn't think I had a right eye. Like, I couldn't see. Everything was so blurry. And there was this dark object above me, and I could tell it was her. So I reached up with my hands, and the belly's right there. And I reached out with both hands and grabbed what I thought was balls again, twist and pull with both hands. And this time when I grabbed it, I held on for dear life and was just kind of pulling myself up on it, trying to rip it off. I ended up wrapping my legs around her head and neck and kind of cross them and holding on. She started to roll around on the mountainside and kind of buck like a bronco and just roll around, just squealing like a pig, making a horrible sound. And and we almost seemed like pick up speed, and I could tell I could feel the grass and the bushes kind of scrape behind my back pretty good. I let go, and she was just screaming, running down the mountainside. She crapped all over me and all over the side of the mountain. And when she left, I went to go stand up, and I couldn't. Like, I just – nothing worked. I couldn't see. I was feeling my face just to, like, what's going on. I could feel my jaw hanging there, my left eye. I remember touching it, and I can move it. And in order for me to look forward, I can, like, hold it in my hand and tilt it up. And I was feeling the right side of my face, and there was no eye there. Like, I couldn't tell where it was. And I remember this piece of skin was hanging down, and it had, like, my eyebrow on it, and just was attached to a small piece of my head, and you could feel, like, the skull and just pieces all over, like, little bits and pieces of hard stuff in my face, which I assume were bits of bone. And I knew relatively where I was on the hill, so I crawled down the hill, and I found the trail, and I crawled around, and I found my my pack and gear pretty quick. I found my gun right away, and I was grabbed my gun, and I had some shells in my pocket, and I was trying to put them in the gun, and I couldn't see to put a shell in the chamber of the gun. Every time I put it in, it would fall out where the clip goes, and I couldn't see enough to drop one in the tube, and my fingers, well, they're going different ways, and big holes in my hand, and I just didn't have the dexterity to do it. So I started to panic because I need my clip. And when I was feeling around on the mountainside, feeling for my clip, I found a chunk of flesh. I believe it was my mustache and lips and goatee, because you could feel the hair and the soft of the lips. And then I found another chunk that was like hard, like cartilage, and a piece of my ear. And then I found some other pieces of my skin, my head. And I'm collecting in a pile in my hand, and I managed to find the clip and slammed the clip in the gun. And the first dark thing got 3 rounds, just because everything looked dark, I guess. Then I'm sitting there, and I just, like, what do you do? Like, I'm holding my face in my hand, and I'm bleeding all over the place, and I knew I was done for. Like, no one survives this. That's when I picked up my phone and tried to text my wife. I knew I wasn't going to make it, and I knew she was never going to see the text messages until they found the body. But I wanted to, my object was to document everything that happened, so she knows that I didn't just give up and just lay there and die.
I don't know why I'm going to start crying. Sorry. And I'm sorry to make you have to relive this. If I know that you probably have some PTSD. I apologize, but if you want to keep talking, I want to hear it.
No, all good. Yeah, there is some PTSD, but we can talk about that later. I'm pretty good now.
Okay, good. You seem like it. Anyways. Okay, go ahead. I won't cry.
It's okay. I basically text my wife, like, I screwed up. I got mauled by a bear, and it's really bad, and I'm not going to make it. And I basically said my final goodbyes to her, because I knew I was going to die right there. And it was just a matter of when and how. And I decided that I was just going to end it myself and make it quick. And that way they don't have to go through the whole ordeal laying there and all that. So I loaded up my gun and set it between my legs and put my chin on the barrel. And I pulled the trigger, and it wasn't one of my proudest moments at all. And it's really hard to talk about it, but I think it's a good thing. The gun didn't go off. It just clicked. And I was kind of stunned for a second of what happened. And so I leaned my head aside, and I reached down for the bolt again, and I cycled another, and I cycled the bolt. And when I did that, the gun went off, and it just sent the bullet just inches from the right side of my face. And that scared the hell out of me. And I was just thinking, like, what am I doing? Like, that's I owed it to my family, my wife and daughter, to at least try to make it somewhere where they're going to find the body. Like, I owed them that. Because where I was, there's nobody going to find me there. I mean, there's maybe half a dozen people that go in that area in a year, and I just needed to make it across the drainage to the other side where more people would go, you know, and I just can't give up right there. I got to at least try to make it to there.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
So then I texted my wife, said I'm going to try to make it to the main trail. You know, somebody's going to find me. And I grabbed pieces of my face and I took my sweatshirt, put it on upside down on my head, so the neck part was around my forehead, and opened up the body of the shirt, and I threw the pieces of my face in there and wrapped it up, and then tied the sleeves underneath my chin to hold my jaw up, and then I tied a couple knots on the back to help hold my head straight just so I can see.
That's then, smart. Honestly, that's a good survival instinct, though. No, that really is. I hadn't heard that part of the story yet. That is actually incredibly smart. Like, yeah.
The whole object was just to try to carry everything with me. And then when somebody found me, they at least know that, like, I didn't give up, like, that I tried. And this is just evidence of showing that I got mauled by a bear and it was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Usually most maulings are, like, you know, broken arm and a couple bites, you know, few stitches. But I just wanted my wife to know that I tried, right? Like, I didn't just give up. And so I wrapped my face and head and everything, and I go to stand up, and I couldn't. All the ligaments from my right leg were severed at the knee, and every time I'd stand up to go take a step, I had no control of my right leg. Like, it just, you tell it to move, and it just wouldn't move. And I'd fall over, and I'd get back up, and I'd try, you know. And in the first 10 feet, I probably fell well over 100 times. I just kept getting up, kept trying. And I finally managed to get to my feet and take a step, and I figured out what I need to do. I had to, like, slide my left foot forward, or my right foot forward, and then take a small step with my left, and then just kind of slide my leg forward, do like a little zombie walk. And I managed to get going, and the first 100 feet of the trail were probably the steepest part of the whole trail.
Really?
Because it went down. Yeah, I went right down the drainage. There's a picture of me in the book wearing an orange shirt walking down a trail. And that was, 10 feet from the attack site. So I got, I don't know, not too far down the hill. And I actually, where that picture is, I lost my footing and basically where that picture is taken of me standing there. And I tumbled 200-300 feet down the drainage all the way down to the bottom. Threw a bunch of boulders and laying in there next to a creek. And I was in so much pain. I remember the gun sling was all wrapped around me. My arm was all caught up and I went head over heels and I was in a lot of pain. And I'm laying there in the rocks, you know, face first into the dirt and everything. And I just remember laying on my right side, just kind of laying there, everything in so much pain and I could hardly move. And at that moment, you know, there's just so many things rolling through your head, like just of all the memories and family, you know, the good time I spent with my wife and out fishing and hiking and, you know, the birth of our daughter. And you know, then it just starts hitting your head about, I was never going to see her grow up, you know, graduate, and I was going to be able to walk her down the aisle, and I was never going to be able to see my wife again, you know, my first true love. And it just, all these things just roll through your head and these pictures and everything just piles up and kind of overwhelms you. And I was laying there and, you know, just all these thoughts just going through, and I tried to pull up my phone, and I sent my wife basically the final goodbye. The last message I sent her was, I tried, honey. And because I truly, that was gonna be my final resting place. Like, I was done. And so I had my phone and I was trying to play some music just to help calm things down and just let things happen, you know, and play the music just to calm my thoughts. And when I was trying to play music, it ended up playing the song that I played for my daughter the night before while putting her to bed. And it was her favorite nursery rhyme. And the song was Baby Shark. And so I'm laying there listening to Baby Shark, and the song ended up being on repeat.
That would be annoying after a while, but it helps you.
I don't know if it's the fact of that song, you know, playing on repeat that just made me want to get away from it, or the fact that I wanted to go see my wife and daughter again. And, you know, that gave me quite a lot of strength and courage just to roll over. And I just reached up for the first rock that I can reach in front of me. And I remember just grabbing on with both hands and pulling myself up. And I got to that rock and just exhausted, beat up, in a lot of pain. And I go, well, I'm going to reach for the next one. And then I slowly started pulling myself up, just crawling up. And I just remember every little bush or every little stick or rock that you had to climb over, just so exhausting. And I just, you know, when I reach one and get to it and I feel pretty good, okay, well, I can make it, you know, to the next rock. And then to the next rock or to that stump, or I can make it to that bushes, you know, clump of bush, and or to that little tree. And eventually I was at the top of the drainage again out the trail, and I got over to a little bush and be able to pull myself up, stand up, and I just kept making my way along. And I just set little mini goals, you know, just 10 feet in front of me and just get to that tree, or let's just get to that stump. I got through that first little bit. At the time of the attack, I was a little over 12 kilometers away from the truck. So I don't know what that is, about 8-9 miles away, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only made it at this point probably a mile from where I got mauled. And most of it was crawling. And then I got to the second drainage, and the main trail's on the other side. So like, oh, I want to make it to the main trail, and it's okay if I die there because somebody will find me there a lot quicker. And I get to that drainage, and of course I lose my footing and I fall down that, but I only fell about 40, 50 feet. That one only wasn't 40, so bad. Only, I mean, it wasn't as bad as the first one. I remember crawling up, and I got to the main trail, and I was like, I was feeling pretty good. Like, I was feeling pretty confident because, you know, as you achieve those little mini goals, it just gives you a little sense of power, you know, a little sense of hope that, hey, I can make it a little bit further, right? And then I was thinking, well, maybe I can make it to where the main trail splits. You know, a lot of people go there, so maybe somebody will find me. But the whole time walking out, I never thought I was going to make it. Like, I knew I wasn't going to make it. That wasn't a thought in my mind that I was going to make it to the truck. I was just trying to make it to somewhere where they're going to find the body quicker. About 5K from the truck, there's a outfitter's camp they have set up there every year, and I know the guys quite well, and they're always there in their tent every time during hunting season anyways. So I remember walking down this creek, and the trail, well, part way out is all washed out. There was a big flood in there, and then it's all braided through the valley. And so I didn't quite remember where the trail was, but I remember I was just going to walk down the creek because the camp was right along the edge of the creek. And I managed to get to the camp, and they had electric fence around the place. I remember opening up the gate, and I got in there, and I remember it just being super quiet in this camp. And there's two big canvas tents, and they usually have horses, and there's somebody there. And so I get to the first tent, open it up, and there's nobody there. I go to the second tent. There's nobody there. It's pretty quiet. So I went back to the first tent, and I started digging through things, looking for a radio or a sat phone, something to call for help. And I remember they had this great big white cabinet, like a 4-foot white plywood cabinet, and had this fancy little gate lock on it. And I was trying to open it, but my fingers were all busted. So I just knocked it over, just pulled it off and let it hit the ground, and it broke open, and was full of canned food, and they just cans are all rolling across the tent, you know, and there's a little black thing comes out, you know, it's like a size of your hand. And I looked like an old school mic telephone, like the old work ones that had the radio phones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
The old flip phones.
Yeah.
And so I saw this case. I'm like, oh, that's a phone. I was so excited, you know, and I opened it up, trying to get it open. And when I did, it was like a Leatherman pocket knife fell out. And so, you know, I was losing hope. And at this point, I was extremely exhausted, tired, very hungry. And there's amongst the cans, there's this triangle shaped can, and it's like, you know what it is right away. It's like that ham spam in a can.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So I saw that and I'm like, oh, it's so yummy. Like I was so hungry, and it had the little tea thing. You got to stick in the can. You got to turn the little, well, when your mm-hmm. fingers are all busted up, it's not, they don't work too good.
But I love that you were like, I need snacks right now. I think this is what I need.
I was so hungry. Yeah. And of course, you know, you got the ham. I'm like, I know what that is. That tasted really good. And it only tastes good when you're on top of a mountain, I found. But
not in civilization where you can get better things.
That's right. It only tastes good in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I had this, so I tried to do the little tea thing and I couldn't get it off. And like I said, my fingers were all busted up and I just grabbed another can and a rock and I started beating on it. And I managed to get it popped open in the corner and I pulled back a bit. And I remember just taking a big scoop of the ham. And at this time, my left side of my face was all hanging down. So I just put it directly on my tongue in the back of my mouth and just let it like dissolve and fall down my throat. And I mean, it tasted really good. Like it was really good ham, really good ham. So they had this picnic table in there and it had like the red and white checkered plaid top. And so I'm sitting at the picnic table and I got this ham and I'm just, you know, taking little bits of it and sticking it in my mouth. And it was so good. And I'm sitting there at the table and blood's just dripping down and you just drip over the table. And I get a little, you know, bounty sheet and wipe it up. And it just was driving me insane, this blood. I'm trying to eat and then just distracting. So I just grabbed the roll of the bounty sheets and started wrapping around my head and face and just to stop the bleeding. And then my hands, of course, are bleeding. So I'm wrapping them up and okay. Now the blood's kind of stopped so I can get back to eating again. And I was wearing shorts and looked down on my right leg and you could see blood. Like there was a big softball size or a chunk missing my inner right thigh and my knee was all bleeding. So I wrapped some paper towel around that. And then I ran out and I grabbed, they had some toilet paper in there. So I started really wrapping things up just to stop the blood from dripping on the table so I can eat peacefully. And then so I found some like
ham.
Yep. I can eat my nice ham. I found some tape, looked like athletic tape. But it was athletic tape for horses, like vet wrap, they call it. And so I was using that to kind of tape things to hold it together. And, I'm sitting at the table and Baby Shark is still playing on repeat in my pocket. And I just remember sitting there at the table and just being so exhausted. I was done. And I figured I'm just going to sit there and wait for somebody to find me or take a nap there in the tent and just let things happen. And cause someone's going to find me there. Like I'm not going to make it to the truck. I'm way too exhausted. And I was digging through a bin and I found some juice boxes and I was like, oh sweet. So I grabbed like a Tetra Pak of juice boxes and started squirting them in my mouth. And that was really good. Grape flavored juice boxes. So I sucked a couple of those back. And then I decided, well, I was going to make a fire and just grab a sleeping bag and curl up by the fire. So I was just exhausted, a little cold and couldn't really move. So I got to the fireplace and they had it all prepped up, matches all there, fire started. Like the whole thing was already set to make a fire. And I rolled out a sleeping bag and I was kind of sitting there thinking like, what do I do? Right. Like, do I just lay here or do I try to make it out? And maybe I run into them coming into camp. And then I just figured, well, I'm going to see if they're probably coming into camp. So maybe I'll run into them on the trail. And so I grabbed, they had a little sheets of paper in there and had a Sharpie. So I wrote a little note to the to the outfitter, just apologizing for the mess I made, because you know there was cans everywhere and a little and a half-eaten or quarter-eaten can of Spam on the table and blood everywhere. So I wrote a little note apologizing for the mess, and let them know who I was. And on the back side of the note was more for my wife. It was just to make sure that he told her that I love my wife and that I tried. And I, at that time, I had my rifle and had 3 rounds left. So I fired off the 3 rounds outside the tent, stuck the note to my gun, put it on the picnic table, and I grabbed the last Tetra Pak of juice boxes that they had. There was 5 total, and I'm pretty sure those guys are mad that I took their juice boxes.
No, but you're so sweet. You left a note. That's like one of my I had my husband listen to the Survival Stories podcast, and I think he might have even started crying just like during it, when you leave a note. It's just like you're probably dying and you're so nice that you're leaving a fucking note for these people.
Well, I mean, you can't just leave a mess and just say, haha, I'm dying, so I'm not going to do it. Like, I mean, you got to still be kind of respectful. I mean, it's...
you're Canadian.
I felt pretty bad. Like, there was blood everywhere, and I seen the pictures afterwards, and I'm kind of embarrassed about it. Like, I made a mess. I mean, I took their vet wrap, toilet paper, and their juice boxes. Come on, I'm pretty horrible. And their ham.
Yeah, you're a real monster.
Well, I guess when I left the place, they had a electric fence, and I guess I put the gate back together and re-closed the fence off. I didn't know I did that, but the guys flew in there right after and to make sure the camp was all closed up, and I zipped the tent shut. And I actually closed off the electric fence and turned it back on. I didn't want a bear to get in there and eat their food.
Oh my gosh.
So, fixed the fence. Yeah. So from their camp there, to the road was 5 kilometers, a little over 5 kilometers exactly, maybe a little bit over. And, I had 5 juice boxes. And so my object was to drink 1 juice box per kilometer and then just save, you know, some for the way. And then I drop them off in the middle of the trail just to mark where I've been, and just that, you know, somebody's looking for me, that's how they can find me, you know, the little Hansel Gretel thing. Mm-hmm. I got to near the end of the trail, about the last 2 kilometers, about a mile, there's a creek crossing, and you cross the creek and then you go up and over the mountain, or not really a mountain, but up and over pretty big foothill, and that's really steep part of the trail. It sucks. You're always tired at that leg, and I was just thinking, like, I can walk down the creek through the water and through the bushes and go down about 3K to where the road crosses, climb up onto the bridge, and then come back a kilometer to my truck, or I can just go up the hill, over the hill, and to my truck. And I was just thinking, you know, debating. If I went down the creek, it's easier to walk, but I've never done it before. And if I died there, well, who's going to find me? Mm-hmm. So I figured, well, I'm just going to walk up the hill. At least they'll find my body on the trail. And I remember I got to the base of the hill, and it's steep, and I'm just like, this sucks. And I just remember looking at my feet and just shuffling them up the hill one at a time. And I got to about 3/4 of the way up the hill. There's these 2 boulders. They're a little bit bigger than shoeboxes, and they sit on the middle of the trail. And for the last 17 years, I hated these 2 rocks. I'd ride my bike down the trail, and you'd hit them and almost fall over every time. I've always been too lazy to move them off of the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember shuffling my feet, and I looked down, and I see these 2 rocks, and I was so happy. Like, I mean, I'm so happy to see these rocks. It was just like, I knew at that point I was, you know, about a kilometer from the truck, and I was almost at the top of the hill, and everything from here is downhill, nice, smooth, easy walk. And I got to those rocks, and I was so excited because I knew at that point in time I was going to make it. So I had 1 juice box left. I'm like, sweet. So I chugged that one back and made it to my truck. And, you know, as soon as I hopped in my truck, I pulled the rear view mirror off and, I remember sitting down, I started up the truck and I'm looking out the window, the front windshield, and I couldn't tell where the end of the hood was. Like it, I couldn't see it. And I rolled down the window and I look out the window, look down, I couldn't tell where the ground was. All I can see was just like dark, fuzzy green and a real light spot in the middle. And I figured the light spot was the road. So I aimed for the center of the white spot and I managed to drive about 22 kilometers to a little resort ranch, I guess we want to call it. They do horse riding trails and you can stay in cabins there. And I pull into the parking lot there and I drove right up to the, right up to the lodge where you're not supposed to drive. You know, I felt bad about that too.
And then you encountered a kid, didn't you? Was the first person that saw you?
Yeah. And so I get up to the lodge and I'm walking on the patio and there's these big, huge windows all along the patio. And as I'm walking along, I just notice this small image in the window kind of flee away. And at the same time, I was opening up the door and I just remember this kid's voice going, "Grandma, grandma, someone's trying to play a prank." And it was a little 9-year-old boy. And I mean, I look like a zombie. I got this big bandage and toilet paper wrapped around my face, all covered in blood. And I'm, you know, doing like a little zombie walk, walking in. And these two ladies come out and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I got mauled by a bear." You know, I gave him my wallet and told him who I was and like, "Do you need anything?" And I guess I asked for a medium temperature glass of water with no ice and a straw.
Very specific. That was,
very specific.
So you're kind of a diva at a certain point too.
I guess so, eh? Medium temperature water. Yeah. No ice.
I'm just joking.
At the lodge, when I was wrapping my face with toilet paper, I was holding my chin. And I remember I was moving around trying to hold it and wrap everything around. When I was doing that, something clicked and it kind of clicked in and I was able to, I guess, kind of mumble talk. You kind of understand me, but, so anyways, I was at the lodge for a little bit and, they tried phoning Stars and the ambulance, but, they couldn't find us. Stars was busy. So then, the owner of the lodge, her dad had a helicopter. So he flew in about a half hour helicopter ride in. He flew in, we got in the helicopter and then he flew me out to, a hospital close by, about a half hour away, a small hospital. And when I rolled into the door there, they just didn't know what to do with me. I mean, they couldn't do anything with me. They basically just threw me in an ambulance and shipped me off to Calgary, where I'm from, to the main hospital there. It was about an hour ambulance ride. And we rolled into the hospital around 9 o'clock at night. And the picture selfie I took of myself was at 9:36 a.m. about 12 hours later when I rolled into the main hospital.
Oh my God. It was that long. Wow.
Yeah. I made it to my truck, about 3:15. And then from there it took me, 45 minutes to an hour to drive 22 kilometers. And I was at the lodge for approximately an hour before I got to the hospital. And then it was about 9:17 at night when I rolled in.
Wow. And weren't you also joking around with them being like, relax? Like, it's not that, like, they were so freaked out by your injuries.
At the lodge there, people were panicking. There's a couple ladies there that were helping out. And one was this young lady who's at the truck with me. Having sitting in the passenger seat and she was at the door. The door is open and she was leaning against the door and she wouldn't make direct eye contact with me. Like it was hard talking to her. I don't know why. I mean,
but you were like, relax, guys, I'm fine.
Yeah. Well, and I remember the lady that was running back and forth updating things. You can hear her running across the gravel. And I remember yelling at her going like, "Hey, just calm down. Like I'm just missing my face. It's not a big deal." My whole object was to keep them calm because at this point in time, my life depended on them. And when people are freaking out and they're in that kind of panic, they don't make clear decisions. So I needed to keep everybody calm so I can make it out. Like everything that they did, they need to make the right choice because, you know, I wasn't able to do anything. So I tried to keep them calm, and then, yeah, when I got to the hospital, they're moving from one bed to another, and then they kept asking, like, what's your pain level at, you know, like 1 to 10, 10 being the worst. And I was like, well, it's unbearable. And they're like, no, we need a number between 1 and 10. And I'm like, no, it's unbearable. And they're like, no, we just need a number. Like, 10's being the worst pain ever. And then the one lady goes, ha ha, shut up. Cause I said unbearable. And she's like, yeah.
Also, if I'm saying unbearable, number one, a little bit of PTSD from your bear incident, obviously. Number two, I think that would mean 10. Like, I think.
You mean above 10?
I think that we're going with. Why do they keep asking you that question? Like, yes, we're going with 10 or above 10.
Yeah, and I mean, I had a lot of fun in the hospital with it. And, the hospital sucked. I was in there for 5 weeks. From the day they woke me up from surgery to the day I left, I was suffering from nightmares and flashbacks constantly, like every 15 minutes. I'd have to have somebody in the room 24/7 to get me out of the nightmares or flashbacks. It was day two in the hospital, one or day two in the hospital. My wife was there, of course, most of the time, and I had bandages everywhere over my hands, covering my feet, and the only thing was exposed was my tips of my toes and kind of where your toes connect to your foot. I don't know what that part's called, but anyways, part of your foot. She would rub them because she didn't know what else to do, because she wanted to comfort me, but she didn't know how, and that's the only thing she would touch because everything else is in bandages. And one of my good friends noticed that and said, well, when he's having a flashback, rub his feet and squeeze them and tell him he's in a safe place. And that helped. They started training my body at a very early stage so that when I got flashbacks later on, that's how they got me out of them really quick, was squeeze my feet. And so I had a sign on me in the hospital and things like that, because if you try to restrain me, I'm going to knock your lights out and I don't know it, right? And I was a pretty big guy for rolling around and hitting people, right? So, but yeah, like, it was in the hospital for 5 weeks. It was very long. And then near the end, when they started fixing my eyes and everything started to swell and go down, I could kind of see, but not. And when people walked by me, the colors and that would confuse me and give me headaches. So I used to get day passes and go sit in the mall with my wife and watch people walk by just to help my eyes with tracking and everything. And I remember going in there and we're like at a Jugal juice, I think it was, or booster juice, getting one of those little slushy things. And the guy at the thing asked what happened to me. And I said, oh, I got mauled by a grizzly bear. And he's like, oh yeah, there's no bears in Alberta. I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's why they downgraded to a Bigfoot attack.
Is that really what you said?
No, it was. I was convincing people would ask what happened, you know, and I'd tell them, oh, I got mauled by a bear. I'm like, oh no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, it was chipmunks or savage raccoon, or we just had all kinds, yeah. Or a haircut incident. The best one was one lady, I convinced a lady that lady was cutting my hair and she sneezed and the razor got caught and started peeling off the skin and everything. And
you're like, I'm not lying.
She didn't believe the bear attack story.
Yeah. I think based on my injuries that we could agree that it's a larger animal.
No, I mean, it's just like with the PTSD side, on a serious note, that was a huge struggle. It was 2.5 years. Well, right from the hospital coming out, I had a therapist and had a therapist in the hospital and worked with them pretty much every day and had several therapists. And when I got out, they all worked together and did different areas of treatment to help, me. And, you know, being in therapy and trying to open up and tell them what happened and, you know, the things I wasn't proud of, like, wanting to commit suicide or trying to, and then just exposing yourself. It was very difficult and really, really hard to do. Just some of the things that, you know, I wasn't very proud of that. And I didn't want anybody to know that I actually did that, because I think people would think less of you. That was really hard, and we put it in the book, and I almost pulled it out just before we published it, because I wasn't ready for let people know, and I didn't really let anybody know until just before the book came out. A lot of my friends and family, and no one knew about that. There's like a few people that I told, and my wife didn't really know that either. She had an idea, but I've never told her.
Wow.
And
it's heartbreaking, but it's also, I feel understandable. I mean, you thought you were going to die. I don't think you should feel shame for that.
No, but it just is that decision, making that decision. Like when you hit rock bottom like that and you just give up, and it's really hard to come back from that. And it's really hard to talk about. Like it's something to be ashamed of. Like you said, it's, we've all been there to some extent, and it's just what you do with it once you hit the rock bottom. Right. But for me, it was really hard to open up, and as more I opened up, the more the therapists were able to help me and help guide me through the process. And when it hit 6 months, because you don't really get diagnosed with PTSD right away. It takes months or almost years until it actually becomes PTSD. It's like a traumatic event, and then it comes into PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. When they finally diagnosed me with it, I was afraid. I was like, holy crap, this is going to be with me forever. And of course, I'd open up another can of worms and more nightmares and flashbacks. And, if a bear would come up on TV, or if I was sleeping and somebody poked me when being asleep, I'd lash out and put me into a flashback. And, my eyes don't close all the way. Like, this is my eyes when I'm sleeping.
Oh, wow.
They're, one third of the way open.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's awesome for babysitting kids. It's awesome.
it's pretty awesome.
It's not so good for sleeping.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
But, working with the therapist, we did a cognitive thinking. So what that basically is certain sounds or smells would set me off and put me in a flashback. So if you're grabbing a tray of ice and you were cracking it, like ice cubes out of your fridge, that sounds like your skull cracking. Just so you're aware when you're taking a cold drink next time, that would send me into immediate flashback. But if I saw you with the tray and you had it in your hand, and I'm understanding like, okay, they're just cracking ice. It means cold drinks, right? They're coming. That's kind of what cognitive thinking is. So you can kind of prepare yourself or try to reprogram your brain to that's what it is. Me, as soon as I heard that sound, it's your skull cracking. So immediate flashback.
Yeah.
Or like the smell of blood. So we had all these figured out, and things were going really well. It went to a period of time where it'd have one or two flashbacks in a month, which is pretty darn good.
That doesn't seem bad.
I can live with that.
Then
it got to the point where they were like every 15 minutes, I wouldn't sleep at all. It'd be like about 12 hours of sleep a week, and everything got really bad. I mean, severely bad. Wasn't sleeping, constant nightmares, flashbacks. I was getting them during the day at work. A few times people at work found me underneath my desk crawling away. I was telling like a bear was getting me, and it was very scary. Then one day I got home from work early, and I was sitting on the couch watching TV. My wife and daughter weren't home yet. They were out at the store or something. So I was on the couch and I fell asleep. And my wife and daughter get home. My daughter's probably 2.5 at this point in time. And she sees my truck outside. So she's really excited. Oh, daddy's home. I get to go play with him. So I'm sound asleep. My wife opens up the back door. My daughter comes running in. And of course, my wife couldn't see where I was. TV's on. My eyes are open. Looks like I'm not sleeping. So any 2-year-old kid wants to go and run and jump on daddy, because that's fun. So, she jumps on me. I wake up into immediate flashback. I ended up throwing her across the room. And my wife come in there, and my wife was trying to hold me down. And And of course I'm swinging and I just remember coming to, and I was really confused and there's blood everywhere and my daughter's screaming. My wife is crying and trying to hold me back, trying to comfort my daughter. And I'm totally confused. Like, why am I at home? There's a bear coming. Why is my wife and daughter here? Like, did something happen? Like, why are they here? And I was so confused. And then it all came to, and I kind of realized what I did. And, you know, like I hurt my daughter and my wife. And that destroyed me. I didn't know what to do. And I just felt like crawling underneath a rock and just giving up. Like it was worst. Last thing you want to do is hurt your loved ones. Mm-hmm. You know, all my daughter did was she wanted to play. And
you don't have to feel bad. They forgive you. I was going to ask that. I was thinking about like a little kid being around and not knowing, you know, like how do you teach a little kid that like, hey, dad has PTSD. Like it's, yeah, I was thinking that, but how old is she now?
She just turned, or she's six, going to be seven soon.
Oh, she probably doesn't even remember it. She was two.
Yeah, she was pretty young. But yeah, I mean,
just, I was like, I don't remember being two, but I guess I'm 38, so I don't know. How old are you? This happened in 2017. You were 32 then. So you're 37 38. Then? Oh, you're 38 too?
I think so. I don't know.
Exact same age.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know.
Go ahead.
It's just like that's just the last thing you want to do, though. Like the ones that are trying to help you and everything, and you end up hurting them, and it destroys you pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they forgive you, and I doubt she even really remembers. Honestly,
well, no, she probably doesn't remember. But I mean, just the when you
the way it made you feel.
Yeah, like when you have PTSD or you're in those situations and you snap and you just see the trust and the hurt in their face, mm-hmm. like they don't want to approach you and because you're scary because you hurt them, and it's never something you want to do. And I remember I hit an all-time low there, and I was talking to one of my good friends about it, and he said to me, you know, like what you're doing right now is not working. How about we try something else? And I didn't really want to try something else because it's really hard to go and talk to a new therapist or talk to, you know, try something different because you got to open up again. And it, I mean, it's hard. It's really hard. So the therapist I had at the time, she said, let's try ART, Accelerated Resolution Therapy, and we got in to go see a specialist that does that. And you know, I got in a room, and this is during COVID now, so you're all dressed up and you got the face mask on, and then this therapist, she got right in my face, and she's literally like inches away, and she's like, I want you to replay back what happened in your head, and I'm gonna wave my hand in front of your face, and we're gonna go from there. So, you know, it's like the first 10 minutes. I'm like, okay. So she starts waving her hand in front of my face. And I'm like, what the kind of bullshit is this? How is this going to help?
Yeah, I was like, this doesn't seem good, but maybe it is.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking like, what the hell is this? Like, I'm going to put myself up for this? Like, this is BS. And so, and it took me a minute, and I just had to sit back and think like, okay, well, what I'm doing is not working. I got to trust the expert here. Like, this is what they do for work, it's got to be doing something. Like, it's got to help. And I took a different approach. Like, I just was like, oh, screw this, I'm out of here. And but I reset myself, I guess. And just when my buddy said to me, you know, what's not working, maybe trying something new might help. And I focused on what they're doing. And that 45 minute session there, I slept over seven hours solid with no flashbacks. Wow. It changed my life. And I did three total sessions, and then I was almost nightmare and flashback free for almost 2 years.
Wow.
Only recently. Yeah, only recently this year I've had quite a few around the anniversary. We're process of moving and everything, so that adds stress to stuff. And so that kind of there was a little rough patch there, but you know, some of the trainings that they gave me there and being mindful and just being aware and mm-hmm. some of the things they give you to work on, you know, went back and did that, and now I'm back to, you know, nightmare free again. So it's awesome.
Yeah. And I think you have a good sense of humor about it too. I think that that's one of my takeaways, but maybe that's just because I'm a stand-up comedian, so I think everything and that's how, like, yeah, that's how we always handled things in my family, was just have a sense of humor about it. When my dad was dying of cancer, he didn't end up dying, he's fine, you can't kill him, he's too mean, that's what he always says, can't kill me, I'm too mean. My mom would be like, when I was a kid, I would be like, is dad actually dying? And she'd be like, the only way he's dying is if I stab him to death. It's fine.
Well, I found out I'm bittersweet.
You what?
I found out that I was bittersweet.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's why she spit me out. You know, and
yeah, you didn't you didn't taste like ham.
That's right.
You weren't good enough.
And how bad is it to be rejected by a grizzly bear? Like, that's sad. Like, you know, rejected bear.
You were rejected. That is actually rude. Honestly,
it is very rude.
That is, it's offensive, frankly.
It's hard to get over that.
That's hilarious. Well, let's plug your book. And I have to get going because I have to go to a child's birthday party in this small hick town that I live in now. Bring them some food. So, and I'm like about 15 minutes late on it.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. You're fine. So plug your book and, let's stay friends. I like you. I'd love to meet your wife too. She seems cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
She's very cool. So, cooler than me. So my book is, actually, oh no, I don't have any copies right here. Darn. My book is called Mauled. Actually, I do. Do you give me a second? Can I grab it?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay,
yeah.
Hang
Perfect.
Yeah. All right. So my book is called Mauled, Lessons Learned from a Grizzly Bear Attack. That's the cover. There's some cool pictures inside. You can purchase the book off of grizzlydude.ca. That's my webpage. It's in work in process. So there's you can order a book off of there. All the books on there are signed by me. And they're,
cool.
Yeah, there you go.
You can get it on Amazon too, I think, right?
Yeah, you can also get it on Amazon, but those copies are not signed. And then if you order from my webpage, you get a fancy bookmark with it too, with some of my Grizzly Dude sayings, like "Don't poke the bear," or "You can bear it even when you think you can't." See,
I like that.
Yep,
Grizzly Dude. You got merch too.
I do.
Can they buy the merch on the website as well?
Yes, there's some merch on there, mostly hats right now. I do have t-shirts, but the sizing's all screwed up. So if you're a 6XL, that fits like a person who a large. So the sizing's a little off.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like it. It's a crop top then on them.
Yeah. I mean, I got hats. You can bear it.
Oh, those are cool. I want one of those. I'm going to buy one of those hats.
So yeah, this one's a little dirty. So throughout this journey, I'm sharing my story and letting people know it's all about mental health and let them know it's okay to ask for help. And asking for psychiatric help is not a sign of weakness, but a strength. It's one of the lessons I learned. And that has led me doing podcasts like this. I get a lot of people reach out to have PTSD who struggle with it. And I started up my own charity called the Grizzly Dude Fund. There's a link to it on my webpage. And it's a registered charity. And what it's for is for evidence-based research for matching the right treatment with the right personality or person for PTSD. And then the second part of it is for social work. How do you get the courage to put yourself out there a second or third time and keep moving forward with treatment? So it's how to navigate the system and how do you get courage to keep moving on. And so my goal is to raise $5 million, and that gets vested in, and it's there forever. It's for a chair position at the University of Calgary to do research into, you know, evidence-based treatment and how do you get the courage to move on. And so I sell the merch off the webpage or at book signings. That money goes towards, the proceeds goes towards my charity to keep that going, to reach my goal. And now it's also got me into inspirational speaking. So I travel around and do inspirational speaking shows, you know, all over Canada right now. And I did a couple in the United States. And I got more coming up next year. So I'm trying to take my, speaking career to the next level and do some corporate events or some sporting good shows where I get out to share my story and lessons I learned. Obviously there's a lot more in there that are in the presentations, not in these podcasts. I can't give everything away.
Yeah. I'm very secretive. Maybe you should come do an event here. We're trying to make our ranch like an event space, like where you're holding a comedy music show at the end of the month, and but also like we're trying to do like corporate retreats and stuff at some point. We haven't. Ooh. yeah so maybe we'll obviously stay in touch. We're friends now.
Mm-hmm. definitely you're a comedian.
Anyways, all right, well, it was great talking to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.